So let me answer the first question first that I know you're gotta be on your mind. How did she do all that starting at 12?
Exactly.
No, really. Thank you. I'm happy to be here, and so much of it I have to thank the wonderful Greg for, in terms of inviting me last year, I think. Didn't we start talking about this last year?
She did this last year, guys.
He's got jokes. And so, this one, the planets aligned. Have been really fantastic. So I really want this to be really kind of Q&A. They sent me some kind of sample questions that I think I'll answer some questions that might be asked by current students. And then we can talk a little bit about it. Great intro. That's my chronological order. I went to USC and studied marketing and advertising, and I'll tell this story, and I apologize for anybody who's heard it or read it, but it's a good story. So I finished USC and went to work for the family-owned restaurant chain out of college, out of USC. I say the family-owned restaurant chain, and my sister says, it was the fried chicken place. It was Goldenberg Fried Chicken. But it was $1 million in revenue. It was on the Black Enterprise Top 100 company list. And more importantly, it was the place that Janet Jackson filmed her first video or video lately. And I have to claim the thing that I did the very first ever Laker Girl poster. Paula and Abdul and I are friends now to this day because I airbrushed her then. Squat down in front of the Rolls Royce, Paula. And I was like, really? But I say that in that this company really had a lot of relationships within the community. And so I came in and was the first non-family member as an executive. And I did their marketing, advertising, public relations, publicity. I did their flow charts. I did their analysis. And I did everything but cook the chicken. And I ate the chicken, but I cooked the chicken. And so one of my responsibilities was showing up at various events for the company, and I went to this NAACP luncheon honoring Bill Cosby, and I sat down at the table, and to the right side of me were people who looked just like me, and they were polite, but they were in their own clique, and I was not going to be a part of it. I went, okay. So turn to my left, there are two 76-year-old Caucasian gentlemen, and we talked the majority of the luncheon, and we talked about everything and anything, and when it was over, they said, I had left the table for a bit and I came back to say hello to somebody, and I came back and they said, we have really enjoyed our conversation with you and we think that you should work for us. And I say, what do you do? And they said, well, I'm Joe Barbera and he's Bill Hanna.
Wow.
Barbera, Hanna, no. Hanna-Barbera, spit take, right? And I literally joined the company 6 months later as director of development. And I tell the story that way each time and every time because there's so many lessons in it. I looked at people to my right that looked like me that I thought we would have a very similar experience enough that they would invite me into the conversation, and they did not. Okay, I didn't get up from the table and look for more people who looked like me. I sat and I was still and said, well, let me turn to my left. And two 76-year-old men who I thought, what could we have in common? We had everything in common. And we had a great conversation. And of course, the payoff to the story would not be as wonderful if I had said, I'm Deb, what do you do? I said, I'm Deb. He said, I'm Joe. He said, I'm Bill. I said, nice to meet you. And we started talking. So I think that's something that you all can take away, that sometimes you just have to show up. As students, current students, and when you get into the workplace, how about connecting with people just because they're in your space, just because they're sitting next to you, just because you're finding yourself in an environment to engage someone and have a great conversation because you don't know where it will lead. I was teasing some people during lunch that It's not just because you all have invited me here, but you know, there are very few people who will say to me in my current role, well, you know, I went to Harvard. And then they pause, like, is that Charlton Heston parting the scene? And you're a big clap? What do I? And I go, and how do you bring it, right? So there's an expectation sometimes when you say something and you think that it's taken you from 1 to 5, and sometimes it does. I'm not saying it doesn't, but you can't expect that each and every time. Even so much so that when you finish here and you say, well, you know, I graduated from Vanderbilt, top of my class, you know, got my MBA. Pause, pause, pause. And this is how I think it's going to be relevant in what I come to do in this company. Here's what I learned. Here's where I think I'm going to be able to add value. Here's the things that I am so glad that I went and did this 2-year program, because now I have a holistic view of this. Or during my summer internship, I got a chance to experience this. Finish the sentence for somebody, or give them an example of how you've seen this value, right? Come to this. So anyway, so started at Hanna-Barbera, went to Warner Brothers, went over to Quincy Jones's company. Quincy Jones had a partnership with David Saltzman, and was in charge of that show with that guy, Will Smith. And I don't know what he's doing now, other than being the number one box office person in the world. And it was really a great experience because that was a show that really just said a family in Bel Air happens to be black. We never, ever explained how he got to be a judge. We never, ever explained how they got to Bel Air. We never, ever explained how Carlton, you know, got into, you know, school and was as goofy as he was, as crazy as he was. But we never explained it. We just took the assumption, this is it. His family's in Bel Air, and the kid is a fish out of water who comes to Bel Air that's going to respond and react to the environment. But we never had to say, here's how they got there, and I loved it. I wasn't there when the show first started, honestly. I was there and ran the show for 5 years, meaning in the television space, you have production companies and you have networks. So the production company is the maker, the network is the buyer, right? So it's very interesting. And it's actually not the buyer. It used to not be the buyer, but with the consolidation, it's the buyer now. The network was the lessee, let's say. And what we had to do was satisfy the lessee's goals, because they were paying for the production, and yet we couldn't just let them say everything and anything, because at the end of the day, we own the production. And we would have the value after the lessee says, okay, well, it's been 6 years, thank you. Then we retained the 183 episodes, and we were going to be able to go out and then do that. So it couldn't be, we couldn't just say, we have to have NBC happy 100% of the time, but they had to be happy the majority of the time, because if they cancel it, it doesn't make any money. That's where the revenue comes, once you exceeded a certain number. So anyway, 183 episodes. And it was wonderful, and it was fun, and he was great then. And uniquely about Will, and I didn't think I'd come here and talk about this, but he always understood his brand. And I think that I've been talking about brand here in terms of Vanderbilt, and you guys have been asking questions about your personal brand. You have a brand, and remember that brand is what people say about you. You can help what people are going to say about you, but your brand is not what you say about you. It's what people say about you. And Will was very clear about his brand and being on a show Monday nights at 8 o'clock. And when 6 Degrees of Separation came around, it was a strategy to show casting agents. The only strategy to do that movie was to show casting agents that he could act. So when it got to the point where he was going to have to find himself in a situation that he felt was counter to his brand on Monday nights, he refused to do it. Because his strategy was not to get people in the seats to go see the movie. He didn't care what people said about, you didn't kiss him. Nope, I didn't. Because Monday nights, every Monday, I need people to show up, and if that's counter to what their expectation is, I can't risk my audience. So he was always, always thoughtful of the brand. He didn't make a judgment, I'm not saying that at all, about was that the right scenario. He said it's going to be counter to my brand. And my brand is this thing, Monday nights, right? So I thought that was really amazing because we had just done a run through, and then I go and I'm sitting in the screening with him, and I go, oh my God, the guy with the hat turned to the side, doing all this stuff, is that guy? You can act. I mean, you're multidimensional. So anyway, so I say that to say that he had a strategy all along, you know. And even now, when you think about what he's able to do, he is now defined to be the number one box office star in the world because he's the only guy right now that can open a soft movie like Pursuit of Happyness and open a big movie, you know, like I Am Legend. He's the only one, and that's pretty cool. So worked with him, and then we did a show called In the House with LL Cool J. And listen, 3 days a week I had to see LL Cool J and say, you know what, put your shirt on. Somebody had to do it. Calling him Todd and saying, yeah, I know you were at the studio late and recording whatever you're recording. The call time is this. And again, didn't think I'd be talking about this, but this is brand. And what LL Cool J was thoughtful about was that his brand was as a rap artist. So there were things he wasn't going to do on In the House. Mm-hmm. He wasn't putting on a flower suit. He wasn't mm-hmm. going to do it. And we'd say, but, you know, you got to go get the lab. And he was like, sell records. I am never going to have that audience be confused about who I am. And candidly, honestly, please, God, don't let this be taken because we don't want him to see this, but that's why he never became Will Smith. Because he said, my audience is this group, and I got to satisfy this group. Right now, we could go get it, the last three Will Smith records, because they're all fully stocked in every record store. Fully stocked. Box was not open, right? Because he said, I'm not a rapper anymore. Right? My brand is this. Right? Okay, so anyway. So I ran that, decided I wanted a bigger platform, and thought that the Essence brand was a great brand, but underutilized, so I went over there. And enjoyed it, but their brand was a magazine, and everything they wanted me to do was to make sure that Coca-Cola or somebody else was buying more ads in the magazine. That wasn't what I had come to do. I had come to create other type of content, period. And, you know, great, I'm going to talk about brand again. You know, it was a great experience, and I'm glad that I did it. Then I went over to Urban Entertainment. I took a break, and then I, for 3 months. And then I went over to Urban Entertainment, which was the online internet company, and I thought that at that time, which was, I've been doing this job for 6 years, so 2001, okay, so I'm thinking the internet means that we can do projects on there that are going to be sophisticated and intelligent because if you are paying your phone bill and you've got an internet connection, you got one of those, you're looking for stuff that the television is not giving you, but I was wrong. Because that was at the time when Heavy.com and Icebox and all of these things were really the things that you couldn't say on TV versus the things you didn't see on TV, right? And so it was really pretty bawdy stuff that I did not sign up to do. So I actually misidentified the brand, right, in terms of the internet then, in terms of content. The internet then, still now maybe, was only really for transporting information. You know, you got your stock tips and your CNN and all your other stuff, but it wasn't the place that you went and got your content. And I still think now it is a place that you get your content, but it's user content. Who's really making money on YouTube, right? People maybe who have the ads, but anybody now, there's no barrier to entry. We could have this on YouTube, right? And we could say we got it on YouTube. And what drives people to see it is whatever drives people to see it. But how do you make money on that? If you can only make money on ads, that's tough. That's going to be tough. So anyway, so let me tell you about the ultimate brand. The ultimate brand was me. And I felt like all along the way, I demonstrated that I built networks of people that were good people and happened to be other diverse people and that I knew people. And so that when I heard about this job to identify top diverse executives and women for senior positions at Time Warner, even though I had not been in HR, even though I had not been in OD, even though I had not been a recruiter, I had not been in search, I said, that's my job. I know people and I can do this. And so my brand was somebody who knew people. My brand had integrity attached to it. My brand was somebody also that I'd tell people, and then they could see it from experience, each move, I'd never done it before. I'd gone from the chicken place, candidly, to the cartoon place, to the live action place. When I was at Warner Brothers, we had 12 shows on the air, Murphy Brown, Night Court, Just the Ten of Us, Growing Pains, The Flash, China Beach, Kung Fu, The Next Generation, you know, all of these things. In fact, I was part of giving Leonardo DiCaprio his first job. His first job was on Growing Pains. Mm-hmm. So he owes it all to me. So my brand was somebody who could be successful without the experience before it. And yet, successful meaning I delivered. So that's kind of how I got to this job of two things. Identifying top diverse executives for VP and above positions for all the business units of Time Warner globally. Fortune 50, currently today, 92,000 executives. After we sell cable, it'll be 50,000 executives. And I've brought in over 100 people, actually 115 as of 116, jumped yesterday, last week, as of today. So my brand is I deliver in that way. And then the other part of the brand is to create the brand that Time Warner is an employer of choice. And that's why I'm here. I go to New York Monday and Tuesday, and I've always, you know, already started playing in my head. Somebody's saying, well, why did you come here? You're supposed to be bringing a talk to somebody. Why did you do that? I did it because I was invited. I did it because I care, and I did it because I want everybody to walk away and say, Time Warner. They have it going on. It's an employer of choice. Maybe I should think about Time Warner. Maybe my friend who's at Owen or Nissan or P&G or Starbucks or Nestle or Disney, maybe they should know about Time Warner. Because it is a thoughtful, progressive, smart company that says, I need to communicate the brand of it being an employer of choice. And there's certain things I can impact and there's certain things I can't. But that's the reason that I'm here. So let me go back to, let me just at least answer one question that maybe was on your mind, which was sample questions. To what do you attribute your success? And I think I developed some sample answers. Yes, I did. So here's what I said, and then we're going to Q&A. So when I thought about to what do I attribute my success, here's what I said. You have to focus on the outcome. Focus on the outcome. And do your best not to get distracted. I think this is a tough time right now in terms of the economic situation in this country. I was telling Greg on the way over here, if any of you have the ability to pursue opportunities that are not in ad-supported, ad-based dependent situations, I'd run to those. Because when GM and Chrysler and this one and that one goes out of business and Mervyn's goes out of business. Now, listen, let me tell you, so let me be clear. I didn't get to say Mervyn's, all shop Mervyn's, right? Not a lot. But it hits me that Mervyn's is going out of business. That hits me. Because they make ads in newspapers. They take ads out. They have a consumer base that is middle of the road America, but they also have great people working there. They're probably great people in the Mervyn's headquarters who are doing the same kind of strategy and analysis and finance and operations and technology. But they've got Neiman Marcus and Saks and anyone else that did not go out of business, right? They're about to flood the market. There's another advertiser that's now been pulled out of the market. Lehman Brothers, Bearstrom's, all of those companies are now pulled out of the market. And so everybody who's dependent on ads, like a magazine business, like a television business, those companies are being impacted by other companies that they don't have any control over, right? So even with those challenges, you've got to focus on the outcome. Don't get too distracted by that. I'm not saying don't pursue those things. Have some other options. If you're weighing four or five things, this is a discussion that we had today in the car, maybe one now moved up on the food chain, right? Because you don't know what the environment is going to be. And I also say don't get distracted by people. Again, it's off the cuff. And I think I do it. I'm already starting to think about what I just said. I'm already thinking of the answers to the questions when I get to New York. Well, why did you go? How about not even wasting my time with prepping for any question I may not get. I can't get distracted by people. I don't really don't care what they think about me coming to Vanderbilt. I'm standing here. I thought it was a good move. I think it's smart for Time Warner. I was asked to do do it, and I was proud to do it, and so I'm here. So I can't get distracted if one person out of 10 says, I don't understand why you went. I can't even get distracted if 9 out of 10 say it. As long as I'm delivering, I'm here, and I'm going to show up. Keep a great network of people. You cannot leave here and not be close to 10, 15, Greg, you told me that, what, 215 people in a class? Okay. Let's just say this. If you stayed in touch with 20 people, you still didn't stay in touch with 10% of your class. That's silly. I go to events all the time and talk about networking, and I did Black Enterprise Women of Power this year, and I'm doing it again next year. And I said to a group of women there, there were 550 women who come to that. I said, if you meet 25 women, you met 5% of the women here. Why didn't you just stay home and read a magazine? Look at who was there and email them. You've got to be engaged. You've got to meet people. You don't know where things are going to lead. You don't know how you can add value to someone and how they can add to you. So I would say to you, out of the 215 people, an exceptional person will be in touch with at least 50 people outside of this. A thoughtful person will be 25, and somebody who didn't get it is under 25. And that doesn't mean constant, what can you do for me? That doesn't mean, can you help me? That doesn't mean any of that other than checking in with people and saying, how are you doing? Here's how I'm doing. Have you found this to be true? I'm looking this way and not saying what I really thought, or how's it going on your new job, or hey, I heard you got a new job. Hey, congratulations. And then the other piece that I would say on what I attribute. So on my network, think about it. Yep.
But it's not only about quantity. It's
yes.
All about quality.
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
So you have to have a balance between the two, right?
Yes. You have to have a balance. Yeah, it's not a numbers game. But if you don't think that there are, and I'm not being specific to you, it is inconceivable to think that there are not 25 quality people in your class that you can stay in touch with. That's inconceivable to me. Now, are there 100 people? Maybe not for every person, right? But maybe there are. So you're right, you have to have quality versus quantity. And quality also depends on your brand. Because if you haven't shown up and been engaging and interested in what other people are doing and talking to the person next to you, in front of you, and behind you, you're not going to be able to get to them. Because your brand said all along that you did not feel that this person was valuable or deserved your interest. So suddenly when you get out, they can't. Right? So, you know, there's that. My networks have helped me. I won't say that they have been exclusive to how I've done this, but I would say that they really do add value. Because imagine, remember, I'm the entertainment girl who goes into a company that I knew nothing about cable. Nothing. And so when they're telling me I need to find a VP of marketing in San Antonio, what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to find somebody somewhere to know somebody in San Antonio. Or somebody somewhere at Cox, Comcast, wherever, Hearst, that can tell me somebody who's a VP of marketing that would be right in San Antonio. So I've had to use my network in that way. And the other thing I thought about in terms of what do I attribute my success is always having integrity. No one ever questions my integrity. You know, I bring it every day. You know, and part of integrity is being authentic. Now, my authentic piece cannot supersede what Time Warner once delivered. You know, you have to find out how people want your communication. Some people want to hear stuff that is not great. Some people don't, and I've had to learn that. And I'm like, well, yeah, I'm not going to fall. I'd want to know. Well, I'm not. So I got to tell my boss what she wants to hear and the way she's got to hear it. And hopefully she'll ask more questions after that. But you know, you gotta have integrity. No one can ever question your integrity. And I will tell you this, and we'll go into some questions. Whenever you get into company A, B, or C, let me quote the wonderful, fantastic head of security for Time Warner: "Don't do wrong on the company computer. Don't do wrong on the company phone. And don't do wrong." But that's how he said it to me, right? Every time you go into a company and you open up that computer, I promise you, whether you have passed by or not, it says this is the property of this company. Everything you do is theirs. Whether they choose to look at it daily, hourly, monthly, yearly, it's theirs. And when they think you don't have integrity, then every conversation you've had on the phone is theirs too. So I know this is information that you will never need to use. You can tell somebody that didn't go to Vanderbilt. but that's that. So let's have some questions, and then if not, I have these other ones that I can go through. Yes?
You talked a lot about branding and how Will Smith always had a strategy.
Yeah.
And you know, you started at Golden Bird Fried Chicken, and it turned into this obviously very illustrious, successful career. Did you always have sort of a strategy or a 10-year plan of this is where I want to be here, or has it just been an ever-evolving process?
That's a good question. I didn't have a 10-year plan. I have always had plan B and C, but I didn't have that level of plan out. And I don't know if it's helpful, other than if you want to focus on the outcome and, you know, I want to be there, but I'm here. How do I get from here to there? There may change, right? But if I'm here and I see myself there, how am I seeing myself get there, right? I think that I always wanted to be in a big playing field. People said to me, I think when I was thinking about leaving Quincy's company, why don't you start your own company? And I didn't want to ever be brand Deborah Linkford. I didn't want that pressure. I'm not an entrepreneur. I say Time Warner more than Dick Parsons does. I'm working on that. I like representing a company and seeing the value that a company has that I can go out and communicate. I like bringing together the internal executives that I think should know each other, connect with each other, so that they feel that they're valued for everything they are, not just what they do. what I do think is important is having plan B and C. As I said, for those of you who thought you were going to investment banking, I would assume you have plan B and plan B. Okay. You know, we were talking at lunch, I was teasing, because I never mentioned names other than Will's, that, you know, I got a call from a woman, and she said, you know, I was thinking, I could think about the entertainment business. I think I could run one of the units. Do you not know I would know you work at Wachovia? You don't have a job next week? You not know that, right? And I say that in all good nature and somewhat in shock, but she didn't have plan B. And what happens is that in certain industries are now failing, her A has gone away. So now B has to look like it was A. And she never had B. So her communication is off about how she could be of value in a different industry. And she's not being honest about, I don't know enough about the entertainment business, but here's what I think I'm very good at. And I'd like to know, you know, how you could see me being, you know, good in this space versus I think I could run something. Really? 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 No, you can't. No. No. So that's what I would say. You always have plan B and C. While you are at the company, believe me, I'm going to tell you this, I get this conversation a lot of times. People will say, well, you know, I just started 2 months ago, but I've always wanted to work at Time Warner. I was like, that's not a good look. That's so not a good look for me. Because past is prologue. So if you're getting in your new spot in 2 months and you're trying to tell me that if I had something, you'd take it, God knows you'll do it to me. And we don't have time to go through all this again. So it doesn't mean that you don't update your resume once you've joined a company. I would say update it after 3 months and say to the people that you've spoken to before, I really want you to know that I'm happy. I am really not looking. But you know what? I'm also thoughtful. The last resume you had on file for me in your system had me still at Vanderbilt, you know, doing this. I've joined a new company, and I didn't want to, you know, assume that you would update it. So here's my updated information. Right? But there's nothing wrong with that. But you're not doing it on the Nestle, Nike, L'Oreal email system. No, no, no. You're doing it on your Vanderbilt system. And listen, part of that 92,005 companies we have is a little company called AOL. Please, God, have an AOL account. Please. Okay, so, you know, I'm double linked with an AOL. It's a joke. Anyway, so, and by the Time magazine cover with him on before I come, not the news one. But we don't own them yet. But you know, there's nothing wrong with that's part of having a plan B, right? And for the recruiters that let's say you're fortunate enough, you've got I was sitting with what someone today, she said, well, I have Anna. I'm thinking, well, how are you managing an offer? Okay, fine. So let's say you have four offers. You're fortunate to have four offers. You're going to take one. Make sure that the other three you've communicated it in the best way, the most thoughtful way, and you follow up with those people. I just want to let you know the reason that I took this offer was because I don't know if I ever communicated to you my great desire is to have international experience. And this is what they told me I would be able to have if I took this offer. This experience I had with you all was really outstanding, and I really do hope that we can, you know, stay in touch and that maybe one day I will be a part of your company. There's nothing wrong with that. That keeps you on somebody's list. Check in with people. Maybe you can say to them, hey, it wasn't me. You know, I didn't chose not to come to this company. Wow, I have another classmate who's really great, who really good for you. Do you want me to send their stuff? You know, why not? That's a plan B. It's part of having a 10-year plan, right?
Yeah.
But it's more so don't get caught up in 10, caught up in where do I want to see myself eventually? It may be 10 years, it may be 6, right? And when I see myself there, why do I want to see myself there? World domination? CEO of a company because you want that headache? You want to be a CEO of a company? You want to run something? What does that mean? Define? And I'm saying it's a little bit, you know, tongue in cheek, but what does there look like and why does there look good? And how do you want to get there from here? I'm telling you, and Greg knows this, when I was at Quincy's company and I was, you know, the vice president of running that, when I wasn't happy and ready to move on, people were saying, you know, people would call me and they said, well, we got a director. I said, director? Are you kidding me? I'm a vice president. I got the number one show on the air. Don't call me specific director. Urban Entertainment. When I was there, I was really ready to move on. I was really ready to move on. And I still was like, it's not a VP or an SVP. Don't you call me. But when this job came up, you know, for Time Warner, where I thought I was born to do this job, and it was a director level, I did not care. In fact, it was a consultant for 3 months. I didn't care. I remember going to go, you know, speak to an advisor of mine, and I said, oh my God, what am I doing? It's a consultant versus senior vice president. He said, well, listen, it's a consultant at a company that wants you where you've been and you can do this and it looks good versus being senior vice president of a company that's basically, it'd be like you're going to Kuwait every day. I don't know. How are you going to take the consultancy? So I say that to say, don't be so fixed on what it's called. Mm-hmm. Fixed on what it is. Mm-hmm. Right? Is that right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So you talk about brand, and you talk about your relationships and so forth. How have you used organized groups, organizations to help you build a brand and also...
I'm very involved in organizations. I really get exhausted on sometimes in all the things that I do, but I do them because I think it's important on a lot of levels. First and foremost, it's very easy, I would say, thinking about all of you sitting here, to be a part of the Vanderbilt alumni. That's pretty easy, right? You're going to soon be one, you know. Whatever affinity groups are here on campus and whatever you have time to participate in and attend, I would say do it. There is no consequence to doing it. If you can manage your workflow, what you've got to do, that cannot suffer, right? I can't do all I have to do outside of Time Warner and have Time Warner suffer. You know, you saw me, I was on the BlackBerry before this, I was on the computer before Greg picked me up. I, you know, was trying to roll calls yesterday between this and the dinner, I'll be going back and hitting off some things. So it can't be with the primary thing suffering. And so for you all students, your work can't suffer, right? But there's no consequence to being involved and engaged in various organizations and groups that you have an interest level in. I'm president of NAMIC Southern California. There's a NAMIC chapter here. It used to be the National Association of Minorities and Cable. It's now the National Association of Multi-Ethnicity because it is for all people in communications. I'm worn out, I'm tired, but I'm president of it in Southern California because I knew I could add value. I wanted the chapter to be robust, and I also think it's very good for my day job. But I also try to separate the two, and the list that's the NAMIC list is not the list Time Warner list. you know, pays for the event. You get to, you know, I try to have separate things. Somebody just invited me to be on the Girl Scout board of recommendations for board members. I wasn't going to say yes because I didn't think I could do it. And then I thought, oh, I can do it. Because that's the kind of board situation that you say yes to, because it's a different group. It's going to expand my network, right? I think when you are fortunate enough to join your companies, I want you all to find out what affinity groups they have. There's nothing wrong with doing that. I mean, so what, you're going to get labeled? Yeah, that's a good label. Go, say I'm interested in it. Because most affinity groups now at companies, whether they be ethnically based or lifestyle based, they have an executive sponsor that is, may not be from either group, who says, well, isn't it nice that so-and-so showed up to that meeting and added value and participated? That may mean that they can take on more responsibilities. I didn't know they could do this. I didn't know they could do that. And I think, you know, also, if you have a chance, volunteer or be involved with a organization that has nothing to do with business. You know, something that you can say, this matters to me. So, for example, my thing is the homeless. I think it is absurd. I think it is horrific that there are so many people who are on the street. I think there are a whole lot of people that I know, you know, that if they did not have checks for 6 months, they would find themselves in a really bad situation. In Los Angeles, we have the number one homeless population in the country. People say that's because it's warm. This is not because it's warm. It's because people get off the plane, train, and bus and think they can make it. And they don't know how hard it is. And they get 3 months behind and they can't get caught up, and then ta-da. So anyway, there's a group quickly called, something called the Downtown Women's Shelter. And I have stuff from, you know, traveling all the time, and somebody, I said, I got all these soaps and stuff and stuff. And so they said, oh, why don't you call them? I said, okay, fine. So I called them and I said, tell me what you do, because I'm very visual. And I'm very, I need numbers. And they said, well, you know, we help women. There's more women on the street than ever. And I said, okay. And there's more older women on the street. I said, okay. They said, we give showers to 45 women a day. I got up from my desk, I closed my door, and I started crying. And I said, 45 women a day get their shower here? Wow. So whenever I go to a hotel, I take every product every day. Because Greg will tell you, I don't do carry-on. That bag and that bag were part of other bags. Listen, I like choices. I gotta travel. Let's just say they were the only thing I could have worn today. And it won't be what I'm wearing tonight. Okay. And I had to have two pieces of luggage because I lose one. I got to still have the other outfits and the other pieces. So, were you at the airport exactly when the plane landed? No. Mm-mm. So when like, okay, well, it landed at 4:55. I'm here at 4:55. Okay. You'll wait another 15 minutes for me to get my luggage. It's okay. So I say that to say I take the products every day. And I send them to these women. And I was telling this conversation with, here's how it's organic, with a NAMIC event I was running. And I was speaking to four people at the time about this Downtown Women's Shelter thing, and I'd gone to that thing the night before. And HBO, a woman from VP of HR at HBO, Shirley Black, said, I did not know about the org, I did not know about the center. HBO has started Miniature Mondays, where they ask all of their HBO executives to bring all of their miniature soaps and shampoo and conditioners to work. And these are people staying at the Peninsula in the Four Seasons. And so, that's how I end up. Do you know what I'm saying? And who knows who I'll be sitting next to at the gala? I didn't do it for that. Who knows who's going to think that's impressive? I didn't do it for that. It's the right thing to do. But you never know what comes out of those situations. Show up that way. Somebody may be very impressed that you have the time or the thoughtfulness to be able to do that. So that's right. More questions? Yes.
You were talking about earlier about the things that contribute to success.
Yes.
And I'm still a firm believer, and hopefully I'll maintain my naive idea that people follow their hearts. And they're good things that
sure.
they mostly that they enjoy doing.
Sure.
So without that, that sounds like being
there.
Many
times.
But if you think that your success has something to do with that you followed your passion, or because you were good at what you enjoyed doing, it became a passion.
The latter. I love television. And I remember when I was at USC, something odd and amazing happened. NBC censor came to speak, and he said, I'll never forget, I was in the front row, and he said, you don't understand that I, as a censor, not only censor words, I censor images. What does that mean? He said that he has to censor that if a African-American actor is cast as a doctor or a nurse, that there did not have to be the lead-in comment of how they got to be that. But if they were a hooker or a thief, there was never a lead-in. I want to be in that business. I want to create concepts. And so I did it. I did it for 14, 15 years, right? And so I loved it. But I loved the impact of creating content. And so, but what I was always good at was creating networks of people and creating relationships. Because when you are in current, so television is this way. I explained to you, you are the producer, and so you make it, and you gotta make sure somebody buys it so that they pay for it, so that you can retain it at the end and make more money off of it, right? And so then the buyer makes the money off the ads. You don't make it off the ads, but you retain it after having the copyright and the license afterwards. So the same in television, where you are either the developer or you are the current person. And so the developer goes out there and tries to find the ideas, but it's the current person who's responsible for keeping the show on air. Nobody makes any money if the show goes off in 3 episodes. You only make the money, really, if you get to 100, because so many things are analyzed at that point. So I was the current person. So the current person is a politician. I gotta make sure the writers take my notes. I'm not a writer, so when I give them notes, they've got to take it. If I say, now you know that wasn't funny, game over. They're not going to take my notes anymore. But if I can figure out a way to say, that joke worked for you. Because I was thinking, maybe they would think about changing the joke, right? So I had to make sure the writers were happy. I had to make sure the actors were happy. I had to make sure that the network was happy. Because remember, they got to be happy to keep the show on here and keep the lights going, right? I had to make sure the production company was happy, though, because the network may have said, we want this person cast, but we don't have the money for that. So I had to make sure the agents were happy, because I needed the good writers first before my counterparts at Paramount and everywhere else. So I had all of these things going, and so it prepared me for this, because I'm trying to keep everybody happy. In my role to present people to my colleagues and oftentimes to hiring managers, I can't be too hard-hitting and just say, I understand why you don't want to hire this person, you're out, you're not, what. I got to figure out a way to present it in a way that they are hearing me, right? So I think all of it was preparation for this, but my passion has always been believing in people. When I was at Warner Brothers, this is my package, so, African-American female entertainment, I was sitting down with an agent, and so we were having this wonderful lunch, and so he was pitching all these writers for Growing Pains, right? And then at the end he said, so, I have a favor to ask you. He said, okay. He said, you're African-American, and I got this really great African-American writer, Leilani Downer, who I just really like. I wanted to ask you a big favor. Would you help? Would you meet with her? Would you read her script? I said, sure. What script did she read? And he said, what script did she read? Well, actually, she wrote the best Growing Pains I think I've ever read. I said, but you didn't have her on the list. You went through a list of 23 writers, and you didn't have her on that list. I said, no, I didn't. I said, how come? I guess I didn't think she could do it. But you think I can read her script that she wrote. Well, then why'd you have her write a Growing Pains if you didn't think she could write on the show? Cut to, I read the script. It's a great script. I get her on the show. They didn't think that the young black female could write for the white family, but she could, because she was a great writer, right? So I've always been that person. I've always been the person to talk about potential. So I think that's my passion. And I've always been the person, I think, understands brand and say, how are you being inclusive in your brand? So does that good answer? So you have to follow, I ask people to think about a few things. What are you good at? And when I ask you that question, you can answer it, but you've got to go and ask people what you're good at. Because you may think you're good at some things, and people don't think you're good at them, right? What do you want to do? Remember what I asked after that, though, is why? Why do you want to do it? Right. And then take what am I good at and what do I want to do and figure out what's missing. Or how is what I want to do gonna coincide in this? And then what's my brand? What do people say about me? Do they say I show up early? Do they say I'm engaged? Do they say that I'm a team player? Do they say that I'm smart? Do they say that I'm analytical? Do they say that, what do they say? Find that out and then go one, two, three, how do I make this all work? Because it may be something that you love or something you really don't love or something you think you want to do, but if you're not good at being a politician, you're not going to be good at the job. You know, if I was not good at playing the game and doing the role and not that 6 years later, I think I'm as good as I was maybe in the beginning in some of the things because I've done it, then I wouldn't be as good at this. It wouldn't matter if I have superstar candidates or not. If I'm coming in and not listening to you and not talking to you in the way you want to be heard, you want to be communicated with, then it doesn't matter who I have. You're not listening to me. We're not. It's not going to work. So, you know, you have to figure out if you want something that you're not good at, you may not be able to do it. You may really. So I say, you want to be a CEO these days? Can you lay off people? You know what I'm saying? Can you make decisions that are really tough that may go against what intuitively you think is right, but is right for the business? You got to be able to do all those things. Yeah. So, more questions? Yes.
Being that you've kind of moved around and progressed a lot through your career, mm-hmm. and you focused a lot on the brand, do mm-hmm. you feel like there are any mistakes or challenges that you've encountered over the course, and how did you address them?
That's a good question. They had it on the set. I wasn't prepared to pull the points on the set. yes. Yeah. I will say, I don't have balance in my life. I woke up, I tell people, I was 28. One day, I woke up, I was 35. Because the television business is a nighttime business, I had tapings 3 nights a week, and the other 2 nights I had to go to comedy clubs. And so I looked up, and I was happy at Warner Bros. I was 28, and I looked up, and I was 35, and still single, and or single, rather. At 45, I'm still single. currently single, right? No, we don't want to knock on wood now. Anyway, but I say that to say that if I could do it over again, I probably would do my best to have a little bit more balance. Okay, so that was a mistake on my personal life, but I don't look in the rearview mirror and say, damn, why didn't I change lanes, right? But I would tell all of you, you've got to figure out some balance too. You really do. And unfortunately with Blackberries really were supposed to be things that enhance our lives or were supposed to make it easier, but you will find that people think it's a kidney and they're on it and on it and on it and if you know, remember, this is what I tell people, it's a computer. It's not supposed to go with you in the bathroom. It's not supposed to be by your bedside. It may not need to be the thing that you wake up and look at. I mean, in certain companies and cultures, I want you to do your investigation on. I mean, you know, if this, you've got a 24/7 environment and they're expecting for you to be that person and you don't really want to be that person, that may not be the job for you, right? So being accessible 24 hours a day is just not acceptable, all right? So there's that part. I think in my perspective on two of the jobs that I was doing, when I knew I was done, I didn't see the lesson in it. I couldn't see anything else in it because I knew I was done. I was like, I'm done. Now, I will say to you that I didn't make a huge mistake because since all of the positions I've ever worked are companies that Time Warner owns, clearly I left each one in the right way. You know, I tell people that that one night Dick was being honored. Quincy was there, right? And so this is where I'm already working at Time Warner. I wasn't there, like maybe there a year. And I saw these two guys. I love taking photos, and so I took this photo of them together, and then they were walking away. I took this photo of them walking away. It was just a great photo. And I went, phew. If I had torched Quincy Jones when I left, if I had left in the wrong way, I would have literally watched them get in their car, got back to Warner Bros. And packed up my stuff. Because it would have been eventual. Because when they got in that car, it was Q and Dick. It was not the CEO of the world's largest media company and the musical genius. My name came up in that car, and I know it. And thank God I had left in the right way, even though I was ready to leave, in a way that I was talked about well. Do you know what I'm saying? So I would say to you that the mistake is sometimes when you see that you're ready to leave, to not still show up exceptionally every day. You know, just say, okay, I'm here. I still got to hit, and not hit on the minimum level, still hit maximum level, and still know I may be ready to go, but that does not mean that I can slack off and suddenly be C-level. You know what I'm saying? So that's probably a mistake that I made. You know, I've always created a great network. I always stay in touch with people. I'm sure I've made other choices that if I had it to do all over again, I may make slightly different choices. You know, I may make them. I don't know if I would have done Urban Entertainment, to be honest. Because that was a real tough, it was an entrepreneurial thing. It was, you know, 8 people, you know. So when somebody says you've got to create a show, okay, this is being taken.
Yeah.
Videotape. I mean, audio tape.
When somebody comes to you with a show idea, and you say, I'm not doing it, and the room gets quiet, you can say, nope, no, I don't, because I don't know those type of people. Because I thought it was a derogatory image. That was bad. That was not a good choice of mine, but I felt like I had to have integrity. But at the end of the day, it was his company, and my check cleared every 2 weeks. So I had to deliver upon what his business strategy was. But that's when I really knew it was time for me to go, because I couldn't imagine somebody asking me to do something that, you know, like that was counterintuitive to me. But more importantly, it was, I can't sell this show on network television. Maybe on the internet this would have been cute, and maybe this game would have been cute, but this thing is not going to work on network television. You actually brought me in to figure out things that start here and get to network television. So I did have some basis of right in my decision, but I communicated it from a visceral level. Like, I won't do that. So, you know, those things that you learn then that I shouldn't be in an entrepreneurial situation. You know, and I'm trying to apply that now. More questions? Oh, come on.
Come on, people.
Hello, okay. Yes. I'll pass out the sample questions.
Can you share with us a little bit about how you identified your mentors and what type of relationship you've maintained with them over the course of your career?
That's a good question. It's very interesting. Let me say this to you. Mentees don't pick the mentor. And that is the fallacy that I think that people operate on much too many times. The mentor picks the mentee. Not to say a mentee can't go and say, will you be my mentor? But it is upon the mentor to say yes. So therefore, the mentor picked the mentee, right? So I would say to you that if you are looking for mentors, again, my question is why. You know why. Do you want this person to help you navigate? Do you want this person to tell you where the minefields are? Do you want somebody to say, kind of fluff, my mother has a term, fluff up your feathers, you know? Do you want somebody to say you're good? My mother who was Nashville's very important. My mother's mother and late father from Memphis, and my mother went to Tennessee State. So why? Why do you want that mentor? Okay, and what are you going to give the mentor? Because it's a two-way relationship, right? Let me give you that for you all to apply. You can get a mentor if you show up and you are impressive. Nobody wants, you know, bad kid. Because everybody's trying to do a job, right? You don't want the trouble. Okay, I remember somebody said to me, somewhere, I was speaking, and she said, I really want you to be my mentor. Because you know what? They say that I'm like an Omarosa. And I went, girl, that ain't a good look. I mean, I was like, that's not good. That wasn't even good on The Apprentice. It's not good. You know, but she didn't understand that what she was saying was, I'm just me, and I'm going to say what I want to say. And then if somebody labeled her as an Omarosa, it wasn't a good situation to be in, and then she's asking for me or someone to be the mentor, and she's already set up, I'm difficult. Oh, sure. Sure. Okay, so, sure. So, I didn't have really any, I would say that I had a mentor relationship. I'm very fortunate that outside of my family, I have a fantastic attorney who is a black female attorney in Los Angeles, Del Shaw Rubel. I was with Del Shaw and the rest of them because she's Nina Shaw. And she would help me navigate and say, let's think about the big picture. You know, and I think I've seen people lead by example, you know. And Ken Chenault sent me a handwritten note after I sent him a picture. His wife did it. I mean, my God, you're the CEO of American Express, and you sent a note? My God, I think that's a mentor to me. Somebody took that time to do that? Wow. But I wouldn't say that Ken's my mentor, right? So I think you want to find out what you want out of a mentor. I think it is good to have somebody at a company that is going to help you. I think it's actually more important at a company to have an advocate. Okay? Because a mentor may be able to come, what's your name?
Danielle.
A mentor may be able to say, okay, Danielle, tell me what's on your mind. How you doing? Okay, huh? All right, maybe work on this. An advocate is the person in the room, right? That says, you know, Danielle is really smart. You know, Danielle really brings it. You know, Danielle is here before I get here. Danielle's here after I leave. Danielle's helping out the colleague. Danielle, da 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 da. That's the advocate. Mm-hmm. The mentor is advising you. The advocate is a proponent for you. You need both, right? And I always tell people, who's in your five? I love basketball. That those first Charles Barkley and Dwayne Wade commercials. I loved them, right? It's got a little goofy now, but I love them, right? But who's in, I'm going to tell everybody here, who's in your five? Right now, who's in your five? Yes, one should be a mentor slash advocate, right? Who's going to tell you, the mentor tells you what you may not want to hear. The advocate is in the room advocating for you and saying you're great, okay? And the room could be this room, with your teacher, with another group that doesn't really think you're great, on the job, wherever, okay? Who's your advocate? Who's the person who's going to fluff up your feathers? Because sometimes we just need somebody to say, you know, you are fabulous. You're so fabulous. I need another word for fabulous. Right? Fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. They need another word for fantastic, right? You need that person. You need to check in with them. You just need to be plugged in sometimes. And somebody say, oh, you're good. They didn't get it. But that's only one in the five. Right? And the other two need to be peers in some type of way, right? They need to be people who you can go to for counsel, for advice, for thoughtfulness, for interesting information, for strategy, for all of those things that you aren't hearing in your own head. You know, I have that, you know, and I'm really fortunate to have it. And, you know, sometimes I have to have that one in that five who's tough. I'm saying, you are not on your A game. You are, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that. Clearly nobody in my five talks about luggage, because they're out. Funny story. But the funny story is, I do have a lot of luggage, right? And one of my friends who always, I can't believe you have all of that all the time. Then the one day she needed some stuff. She goes, now I know in that bag. I know you got a wrap and a purse for me. And I said, I do. You know I have an extra. But here's the condition. You can never talk about how much stuff I have. You can't benefit from it. And she stopped. Right? And it was just so funny because it's like, you know what? I'm known as a person who has, it's not ridiculous anymore. But you know, I wow. I saw it. He saw it. But we don't have the videotape going
That's
on.
Right.
So, for the record, Greg King looked to his left after I said that. No, but I'm known as a person who is prepared, you know, for a lot of stuff. And I'm a giver. I'm like, oh, no, I don't have anything for you, girl. You know, and even though this is not business school discussion, yes, it is. Because I share things, and And I also don't want to be distracted that because I didn't have something I was tracking. Now, let me be very, very clear, and I'm so glad it's come across me to say this. If you are working for a company and you are brand new on the scene, remember, I'm 6 years into this and just promoted in April, so it's all been popping at this point. Okay. But if I were at HCA or at Booz Allen or somewhere else and you're a consultant and you got it, you're traveling with your colleagues, oh yeah, you got to carry on at that point. You've got to carry on because you can't be the person that they're all standing around and waiting for the luggage to come down. I do it because I'm traveling by myself and it's okay. Do you know what I'm saying? So you've got to also figure out the culture and the environment. There's a great book you all should read. It's called Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office by Lois Frankel. It is a fantastic book. Because here's what she says. Your career and these companies, it's a game. It's a sport, okay? And understand the sport. Understand the rules of the game. The rules in the hockey game and the basketball game and the baseball game and the football game are different. And so are the uniforms on each team. Don't show up in that basketball uniform if you're in the football game, right? Don't show up in a hockey uniform if you're playing tennis, right? Those are the things that you can take away the personal perspectives on it and just make it very objective, right? So what I'm saying is if you are in a consulting thing or you're traveling with other colleagues and they are getting off the plane and going to the thing, they can't be waiting for you. So you got to figure it out in a different way, right? Those are the little things. If you figured out on this team that there's only five people on the team and you got to be a different role player, you better understand that versus the football team where there's very clearly a defense and an offense team, right? And there's 11, right? And 11 on each side? Holler the player. 11. We don't even have a football team that way. Other than USC. Hello. Hello. But you know what I'm saying? 11 and 11 is different than five, right? So different than one if you're playing tennis, right? Different from hockey, where it feels like you can fight on the thing. It's okay, right? Different than something else where you can't at all. That's where you can't at all. You are penalized. Find out what the rules are. Find out what the boundaries are. And remember that if you go out of bounds some type of way, somebody gets penalized. Maybe you get penalized. Maybe the team gets penalized. Maybe you forfeit a point. Maybe you forfeit the game. You've got to understand what team, what game, what sport you're in, what team you're on, what the uniform is, where the rules are, what are the boundaries, and what happens if somebody goes out of bounds. And sometimes going out of bounds is being the person that decides to throw out the smart question or why are we doing it this way. That's out of bounds. It's out of bounds. Maybe it's not saying anything wrong. That's out of bounds, right? So, you know, nobody wants to be, I'm a huge basketball fan. You can't have five people on a team and somebody being uncomfortable with the ball. Not gonna work. Football teams, I bet there are people who never touch the ball. They got Super Bowl rings, right? They're just supposed to keep the other one away, right? So understand that if you're not going to want the limelight attention and want the ball, you got to go and get into a bigger situation. And if you want to own the ball and have five people, you may be better in a smaller environment where you really have impact. So are we up on time? No, I'm just doing that. One more question. I got five. Okay. Okay. Who has another question? Somebody. Yes.
Okay. Working in the entertainment industry, and integrity being very important to you, are there any specific moments that you feel your integrity was really challenged?
Other than that particular show idea. Yes. let me make a bigger comment, because I'm glad you asked. So here we are, I'm here at Vanderbilt, and you all are getting your MBA. And traditionally, the entertainment business has not been a place where they've been coveting MBAs. But that's changed now because it's all about the business of the business. When you read what Jeff Bezos said about the Warner Brothers strategy, that they're not going to make 22 movies, they're going to make 11 movies, and they're going to make big blockbuster movies, they got a whole lot of people who have MBAs talking about finance, talking about digital, talking about operations, talking about how are we going to go over to, you know, Hong Kong. I think we just announced that we're going to, you know, be the first people to really kind of do an anti-piracy. Kevin Tushihara is a Stanford MBA, and he is running now the home entertainment, which includes not just home video, but digital, so everything other than TV and everything other than film production is Kevin, and yet Alan Horn has his MBA and he's the COO. So there are roles in entertainment, not just now in home video, but if you can, for MBAs. So you can come there and say, wow, it's not just about making art, it's about how you make the art a business, mm-hmm. right? So I didn't address that. So I'll say that I think the entertainment business is a good business, but I want you to know that they have not been the people that are there kind of coveting people. I mean, when you talk about Black MBA, we were there, Disney was there, because Disney has a very a wide offering. There are parks, you know, and then there's the ABC News piece. They got the books, they got the magazine piece, right? We were there, Disney was there, Sony was there, but they got Sony Electronics, right? So they got a hard product. Our hard product is either a magazine, right, or a home video. That's the only hard products we do. And the magazine is one thing, but the home video is an aftermarket thing. We've already made the movie. Now we want you to buy it again, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, Paramount wasn't there. I don't think NBC Universal was there as part of GE. Mm-hmm. So they're not, so you got to kind of come in a little bit differently.
But what about all their ancillary business development units? Because you've got television and you've got, and certainly if you are on production side,
yeah.
not the network side,
yeah.
then after the 200 or after the 100, then you've got home video and you have publishing
right.
and you have
right.
licensing and merchandising.
But those right, those are the MBA spaces for ancillary, right,
mm-hmm.
and not primary for the most part, right?
Yeah.
So, but they need more MBAs. I'm going to tell you that I'm very excited about it, that they need it, but they should need it because of what you bring to it, not just because of the three letters. You've got to figure out the way to do that. You know, I don't think it's more so my integrity that has ever been challenged. It sometimes is... that I'm always the optimist, you know, and it's painful for me when I think I have outstanding executives that I can't move forward, and my integrity comes in where I really want to be a bit more hard sell than a marketer, and I have to pull back because I'm then going to do a disservice to who I think who the candidate is, and because I'm internal to a company, what's really interesting is that if I run a search firm, the client is always the company, never the candidate. And I never approach it that way, ever, ever, ever. I cannot have somebody have, for the most part, you know, I'm only one person, right? I do my best to have nothing but respect and high touch and talk to as many people, whether they are the person looking to be an assistant, which I don't do because I keep saying I do VP and above, but I gotta call it back at least to say that and go online and see what I can do. To the person who I think would be outstanding or the person who's left, if they're out there trashing me and trashing the experience, and because this is a small network of people, there is no way I can get their friends, their colleagues to really think of Time Warner first. So it's a real juggling act where I may not agree with some of the ways that things are being done, and I gotta just sit back and say, but I can't control that, you know? Last piece of advice. There's a really great guy who is running our games business at Warner Brothers, and it's very interesting. It's with a chagrin, I'll say this. We were doing a Black employees at Warner Brothers, and so we had one woman who was a Harvard B School alum, and we had one person who was a Stanford B School alum, and him, okay? And he was the highest title person there. He was the president of Warner Brothers GameStar. His education was half a year of college. He liked the games business. He liked games. He could take apart a computer and put it back together. That was so impressive to Microsoft that they decided to fund this company. Because he was taking apart the computers and putting them back together so that they could run the games faster. So they invested in him. And we needed somebody to run our business, so we went and got him. And we had to buy his company to get him. Okay, right? He said the most profound thing in the world. He said, forget the golden rule. I'm like, I'm moderating this thing. I'm like, oh, Lord, what did you just say? Forget the golden rule. It does not matter how you want to be treated. Treat somebody how they want to be treated, and they, in turn, will respect you enough to treat you how you want to be treated. Mm-hmm. Don't go into a situation where if I were running this, I would do it this way. If I were this person, I'd want me to tell them the idea, da-da-da-da. If I were that one over there, if I were the CEO, I would, you know, he should find out when you enter into the workplace find out how the people you work with and you work for want to be communicated with and how. Find out what's important to them and serve that up. And then after you do that, they will in turn respect you enough to treat you how you want to be treated. And that is the most important thing you can do. You cannot go into a workplace and think you know more than the CEO. I promise you, you do not, right? And you won't even get the chance to show you know a little bit as much as they do if you are not respecting the way that people want to be communicated.